Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Please take your seats quickly, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to The Passing Shot with Joel and Kim, supported by DownloadTennis.com. On today's French Open quarterfinal catch-up,
Rafa sees off a spirited Schwartzman.
Zachary stuns Swiatek.
And Pavlyuchenkova makes it lucky number seven.
Kim, the quarterfinals in Paris are coming to a close. We have Djokovic versus Berrettini in the night session at the moment. And I've got to say, kind of watching a little bit on TV, it's been great, I think, to have some proper noise back in Philippe Chatrier. 5,000 fans there. The first time that's been allowed on the night session. And it's great to have so many fans back on the court.
Yeah, I think all the fans, all 5,000 of them, are probably wanting the match to go on a little bit longer. I think they've got about 40 minutes left. So I'm sure they'd like to see a bit more tennis, and they'll be edging Berrettini on to get this third set, which is just into a tiebreak as we start recording. I mean, otherwise, it has been pretty regulation for Novak, I have to say. But I feel like the Novak-Rafa semi-final is... I don't know if they're going to schedule it as a full-on night match, but I'm sure part of it will go into the night match. I'm not sure how they're doing the ticketing, but I feel like they're going to lump that as a night match. I feel.
I would imagine Amazon will be on the phone to Guy Forget and the French Tennis Federation or whoever runs Roland Garros to be like, yeah, put that match as the night session. So yeah, we'll be interested to see how that scheduling is. Of course, the men's semi-finals are on the Friday, women's semi-finals tomorrow. We will be previewing all of that later on in the podcast, but let's start with the action from today, from day 11. We're going to start with the two women's matches, which have been, I mean, generally speaking, Kim, the quarterfinals of all the women's matches have delivered, I would say. We've had upsets, we've had matches going the distance. It's been really, really thrilling stuff, and it's left us with four semi-finalists that I don't think anyone in the world would have been able to predict.
Yeah, if someone had predicted this particular quartet,
they should be getting a lottery ticket. Yeah,
I want to know that person. Yeah, I mean, today we had Maria Sakkari beating the defending champion Iga Świątek in straight sets, 6-4, 6-4. So we were just saying, you know, before in our previous pod that Świątek had not lost a match at Roland Garros for a while now, and she'd won, I think, 22 sets in a row or something along those lines. And yeah, that quickly ended. And well, Sakkari just seemed to have an answer really today. You know, she could match Świątek in terms of the power, and Świątek was just a little off. I mean, I know she had a medical timeout at 2-love down in the second set. She didn't seem as on it as she usually does, but I didn't really notice much like restriction in terms of her movement. So I feel like Sakkari just, you know, put something to the court that I don't think anyone was really expecting today. I mean, she's been playing well. She beat Kenin in the previous round. She's beaten Elise Mertens, but I don't think anyone really expected her up against, you know, Świątek, who's also been playing really, really well. I don't think anyone expected that matchup to result in a Sakkari win.
No, and I think one of the reasons for that is, I think if you look at kind of both players on court, I think, you know, if I was kind of, you know, analysing each of the kind of individuals, I'd still say that Świątek on her day has more talent. And, you know, when she was kind of hitting winners on the court, even if she had a, you know, her thigh kind of heavily strapped, it just felt kind of more effortless, versus Sakkari, who, you know, I think is one of these players who's just very much kind of applied and dedicated herself to tennis. you know, over the last kind of few years, has really kind of put a plan together and is really kind of making sure that she makes the most of what she has and, you know, putting that and bringing that to the court, which I think has been really, you know, it's been one of the deciding factors, I think, in terms of who has gone on in this tournament in the, you know, in the women's draw, because, you know, a lot of the, you know, the big name players have kind of gone out earlier on, and it's really been left, I think, to the, you know, players who've been able to just, you know, just turn up and deliver, really, who are kind of coming through. And I would kind of very much put Sakkari in that category. And as you said, from the baseline, really, she wasn't really, I think, fazed or intimidated really by Świątek. And, you know, I don't think Świątek was playing that well. You know, I thought her, you know, I think we've seen her forehand be, you know, better in other rounds. I think her serve as well, it just kind of sits up, particularly when she has that slice second serve. It just felt like it just started the point off on the wrong foot. And you could see how Sakkari was sort of making inroads into the Świątek game, because if you give her a ball to hit, Sakkari on her day can just, you know, she can just marmalize it. And I think today was one of those days. And again, her approach, I think, to kind of having that break and securing that break and not letting the medical timeout phase her, it just showed that, I think, the improvements in her game and the fact that, you know, she was able to come through it. And she just did not, I don't think, look like she was going to, you know, bottle it at any point.
Yeah. And what's impressed me with Sakkari is she looks really fit, really fresh. You know, Świątek's played a lot of tennis, like she's been in the doubles and had some long matches. And obviously, you know, she did have to stop for that timeout today. So I don't know how physically she is, but I feel like Sakkari, you know, she had a little holiday before the tournament. She's just looking really, really strong. And I've just, you know, although, you know, we've got four new Grand Slam semi-finalists, a couple of them have had really long battles. They've also been playing in the doubles. You do sort of wonder how they're holding up physically. And I just wonder if that now gives Sakkari the edge. It may come down to kind of a physicality at the end of the day, but, you know, we'll see how that goes. I know adrenaline can power you through, so I'm sure the others would have a thing to say about that.
Just talking on that kind of singles versus doubles debate, because it has been quite interesting, because there are other players who've gone, you know, far in other competitions. You know, Krejcikova, I think, was in the singles, ladies doubles and mixed doubles all the way through to the quarterfinals. You know, a lot of kind of people looking at Świątek and, you know, having that medical timeout, not looking herself and sort of putting two and two together in the sense of the amount of time she's spent on court, particularly with the doubles. I mean, do you think she's going to reflect on this and think in hindsight, maybe I should have just focused on the singles, and whether doubles was, you know, a bit too much? I mean, we've got to remember, I mean, one of their matches, with, you know, she was playing with Bethany Mattick-Sands. They beat the top seeds, Elise Mertens and Su Weishei, 5-7, 6-4, 7-5, came back from 5-1 down in the deciding set, saved 7 match points. I mean, yes, that's great in the moment. But if you've got bigger ambitions, particularly in singles, particularly with, you know, defending your title, which we know is a very, very hard thing to do, do you think, you know, they maybe got it wrong in terms of signing Świątek up to the singles and doubles?
Well, I mean, she did it last time she won. You know, she got to the semi-finals, I think, of the women's doubles like last year, and also won the single. So she's probably thinking, if it worked for her then, why wouldn't it work for her this time? And she was feeling physically good coming into the tournament. I mean, you could also look at it from the other way, like, you know, Krejcikova, Pavlyuchenkova, like they've been doing well in both, but perhaps playing the doubles has meant that they've done so well in the singles, you know. So it's kind of finding that balance. And I guess you only really know by doing that. And Świątek might well find that, you know, come the next Grand Slam, she does decide to scale it back. But she's still so young, it's, you're not going to know unless you kind of get out there and do it, I suppose. But I mean, we've had so many players who have, well, I say so many, but like obviously Serena, for example, used to do it back in the day, especially like at Wimbledon, and win both the singles and the doubles. So obviously it can be done. And it's not something we see the men doing, is it? But it's much more doable for the women's side of things.
Yeah, I think that's an interesting point, because I think it can be done. And, you know, I think Jim Courier made a point on TV earlier saying, you know, things happen in cycles, and he wouldn't he wouldn't be surprised for, you know, these things to happen again. I think he was saying, you know, in reference to a men's singles and doubles champion, the last person to do that was Yevgeny Kafelnikov, you know, quite a while back. So, you know, in his eyes, he actually thinks that, you know, these things are cyclical. He could see a men's singles and doubles champion at some point in the future. I personally am not so sure. Just kind of looking at kind of the ladies' side, I think, you know, the fact that Serena was able to dominate in the singles and the doubles with Venus, I think that's just for me, that's a completely different era. And the fact that I think this era is, you know, there's a, you know, the WTA tour runs really deep now. We've seen this by the fact that the semi-finalists are all, relatively inexperienced, but they're still making it this far. And therefore, I do wonder whether, although, you know, Świątek is young and probably wants to play as much tennis as possible because she, you know, really enjoys it. I do wonder whether this era, because it is so competitive and the talent runs so deep, particularly on the WTA singles tour, whether it is feasible anymore. I'm of the opinion, I think, you know, it's probably not if you have bigger ambitions. I know there's been sort of success stories. I always remember Barbora Strichkova, you know, at Wimbledon when she took out Konta, I think won the, you know, the ladies doubles title and got to the, you know, the semi-finals of the singles. But, you know, to do both, it feels for me, it's a big, big ask.
I think Lucy Safarova was the last person to get to both finals in the same tournament, which was at Roland Garros. She won the doubles and lost to Serena in the singles, but that was about 10 years ago. But it is once in a blue moon that it kind of happens. And I do think, yeah, like if you're going to be, I was going to say if you're going to be serious, but then the likes of Ash Barty, you know, she has been tending to enter the doubles, but then, you know, she's only got one slam so far. So has it paid off? I don't know. But I do certainly think there is a role for players like Krejcikova. You know, she's been a doubles number one, like formerly known for her double success. You know, she won Roland Garros doubles in 2018. So it's like a really good, I think, pathway for some players to go down earlier in their career, because they might have a lot of success on the doubles, but then later on it will translate into the singles. So I guess it, whatever works for you, there's not really one set path, is there?
No, because, you know, we were speaking, I think, you know, last season, the fact that Sabalenka and Mertens sort of agreed to, although they were having really great success, they sort of agreed to part ways, you know, so that they could focus on their singles careers. Still play every now and then. But yeah, there's definitely, I think you're right. I think there's not like one set path, and I will be interested to see if Świątek is signed up to the doubles competition at Wimbledon, given, you know, what has happened here. I saw that Andy Murray tweeted her. Some people talking about it the tweet of death, you know, in regards to the competition. But, you know, I don't know if there's going to be any chance of a Świątek Murray mixed doubles team at Wimbledon. But yeah, I don't know if I think Świątek, for me, I think she's just going to have to, as much as she might feel like she wants to play doubles, for me, I would just stick to the singles.
Well, you better get on the phone to her coach and have your 2 cents worth, yeah. Joel. Świątek Andy mixed doubles pairing would be really cool, but
that'd be so much fun.
Andy should do less of the tweeting, or I don't know. Yeah, just put the curse on it. But Świątek, she was trying to do the impossible, and that was defend a Roland Garros title, because I think the last person to do that was Justine Henin, you know, what, 20 years ago or something. So it's been a long, long time. And in fact, that anyone's really defended a slam title, you know, apart from Serena. I know Azarenka did it at the Australian Open, but again, that was like 2012, 2013 kind of time, I think. So it's been a long, long time. But Sakkari will have to get through Barbora Krejcikova to try and make the final, because she came through against Coco Gauff. This was a bit of a strange match, because Coco Gauff was, you felt she was much more likely to win that first set. She had 5 set points. She had a couple in the tiebreak and a couple, I think, serving for it as well. And yeah, Krejcikova managed to save all of those and then end up, you know, winning the tiebreak. And then very, very quickly went up to a 5-love lead in the second set. So it really went away from Goff very, very quickly. And she managed to, you know, get a few games back, but it just wasn't enough. It wasn't the greatest quality match, I think it's fair to say. A lot of errors from both sides, but obviously Krychicka managed to get the job done. And Coco Gauff, you know, I think we sort of forget that she's still so young and we expect so much. And actually, she's had a really good tournament. And although she's fallen, you know, today, it's, and she will be ruining those set points, she's still had a very, very good run here.
Yeah, it was a match where I don't think both players sort of hit the heights that they have hit kind of en route. I mean, just looking at the unforced error count, I mean, Krychicka hit 28 unforced errors. Coco Gauff hit 41. So I don't know if nerves were a factor in the fact that, you know, there was maybe that inexperience there. I think in terms of kind of Coco Gauff, I think she can look back on this and look just generally back on the clay season as a very productive one. I think, you know, she's done kind of really, really well. I think, you know, for me, if, you know, I was in her camp and thinking about kind of, you know, what I need to kind of work on, I feel she just needs to look at those five set points really in the first set. And think there were, if there is one thing that she can work on is perhaps kind of shot selection, you know, in the big moments, because I think that kind of told a little bit. And, you know, perhaps if her shot selection was a bit better, you know, maybe she could have carried that momentum and also won in straights, but, you know, wasn't the case. And Krychicka, who, you know, isn't as young, I think she's kind of, you know, 25 years old, has been on the tour, you know, she started in doubles, and has very much seen, you know, this season very much as her kind of singles breakthrough. I just think her little bit of extra experience sort of told. And even though, you know, she was kind of five set points down in that first set, she really, I think, made sure that, you know, she stayed composed and kept herself in it. And I think Coco Gauff was a bit kind of surprised and taken aback by that. And, you know, she quickly found herself five love down in that second set. And although she kind of brought it out a little bit to make it a bit more respectable, you know, 6-3 in the end, she wasn't able to kind of, you know, mount a serious kind of comeback. So, you know, I think there's obviously work for Coco Gauff to do, but you've got to remember she's 17 years old in a quarterfinal at Roland Garros. That is seriously impressive stuff. And we shouldn't forget that.
Yeah, I think because she had that breakthrough like 2 years ago, that was when all the hype was. And now we're just like, oh, it's Coco Gauff. Of course,
it's run of the mill. Oh, yeah. She should be getting to the semis. Yeah,
I know. Exactly. But she was a junior champion here only 3 years ago. So that would have been a hell of a quick, you know, turnaround if she'd like gone and won the singles only 3 years later. Yes, I think also, yeah, Krychicka, she was very level-headed. And also I felt Zidanejic yesterday was also very calm and a bit more composed throughout. And I think that's obviously helped, because in these like push comes to shove moments, they've been able to save those set points and break points and what have you. Obviously, it does mean we've got four first-time semi-finalists. And the last time that happened, Joel, at a slam on the women's side of events was 1978 at the Australian Open, which was won by Chris O'Neill. So, yeah, it's been a very, very long time. And, I mean, does this increase the pressure for each of them? Because it's, you know, it's almost, I mean, I know Sakkari is now the highest-ranked woman left in the draw. Pavlyuchenkova, Sakkari, you know, you'd have to think that them two are the favourites. But does that increase the pressure, or, you know, because they're sort of up against players who are also in the same situation, or would you rather face, you know, a Serena Williams or a Muguruza or someone who's experienced at the latter stage of a slam, because you sort of are the underdog and you know, you haven't got anything to lose?
You know, if we're looking at kind of Cinderella stories, I think, you know, we'll come on to it in the second half. Pavlyuchenkova is probably the one you're kind of rooting for, given her time on the tour, given that this is her seventh time lucky to get to a semi-final at a Grand Slam. I think that's the Cinderella story. I think, you know, Sakkari will feel like she's the favorite. You know, she knocked out the pre-tournament favorite in Świątek. So maybe she's assumed that mantle. And you certainly think those two players will be the ones potentially going in as slight favorites into their semi-finals, potentially to get to the final. I mean, I was just kind of, you know, reading some kind of interesting points on, you know, on this kind of group of players that we have, and the fact that, as you said, we do have four first-time semi-finalists. And, you know, the likelihood is on the men's side, we're going to have Novak Djokovic and Rafael Nadal play each other, I think, for like the 58th time. And, you know, I was kind of, you know, wondering in my head, you know, does it hurt the WTA tour that it's almost like, does this suggest it's almost too unstable? I know we've kind of, you know, liked the fact, I think, that, you know, we have these sort of surprise stories come up every now and again. You know, first time semi-finalists, like, you know, Podoroska last year. But is this group of four, is that almost too crazy? Is that too unstable? And do we want a, you know, some sort of resemblance of a, I don't know, a big three or a big four or whoever it is, to add some sort of you know, stability there? Because, you know, it feels, although, you know, it's a great achievement for all four individuals involved, is it too crazy, just kind of looking at it? And you know, there will be, I'm no doubt there will be people out there looking at that set and thinking that shouldn't be two French Open semi-finals.
I think for me, I like the balance that we've got at the moment, where on the men's side, you've got these very well-established personalities and, you know, people going for the history books, and then you've got the rivalries and you've got all the history behind that, and everyone knows, you know, their household names. But on the women's side, it's got that unpredictability. You get to kind of get more up and coming players. There's a fairer distribution, I guess, of the top prices, because every slam, it seems to be someone different, and you get to know a wider variety. But perhaps, you know, there aren't as many household names, and you don't get the same sort of rivalries, and it's harder for people that, I guess, aren't following tennis week in, week out to get to know the players as well, or to remember them. But I mean, it's difficult, isn't it? Because we're like in tennis, like we're following it 52 weeks of the year, whereas someone who maybe just watches a bit of the slams or turns up for the final, you know, maybe they would have a different perspective on it, and they might only want to watch the women's final if it was Serena against, you know, Azarenka or something. But I think maybe, you know, things are cyclical. It may change. You know, when the big three go in the men's, it's probably going to have a bit of a period, a bit like maybe the women's now, like we've got now that Serena's not doing her business. So I think we've got to appreciate it for the different, like the values on both sides of it, I think. And I think it would be boring if we had two tours that were kind of very dominated by just a handful of players.
Yeah, they're definitely different beasts. Let's move on to the men's side and the two men's matches we have had today. Or, well, we've had one complete one. We've got Djokovic and Berrettini, I think, in a fourth set at the moment. But Kim, Nadal fan, we've had Nadal beat Diego Schwartzman 6-3, 4-6, 6-4, 6-love. I mean, this was a pretty fun match for the first three sets. Schwartzman was a very, very game opponent, I think, for Nadal. I always think he actually brings out his best for Nadal at the French Open. Like not many other players do, actually, I think, when they face him. But you know, Nadal was able to get it done. He ended in a seriously quick fashion. I think he won 20 of 21 service points in a row from that 3-4 deficit in the third set. But I mean, it was a pretty strong way to finish the match.
Yeah, after that blip at the end of the second set, when I think Schwartzman won three games in a row and clinched that second set, it was 4-4 in the third set, and you sort of thought, well, this is kind of the critical time of the match for Schwartzman if he wants to make a real go of it. And Raf obviously got that break and then managed to win I think the last nine games straight, and taking a bit of a leaf out of the whole out of Djokovic and what he was doing, you know, after Musetti went two sets up. You know, it was just absolute obliteration, really, for the last sort of phase of the match. But I think, like you said, with Schwartzman, I always get the impression that he loves playing Rafa, and he like really relishes the challenge, and he does bring it. But you always did feel that inevitably, like, you know, can he really for five sets, you know, play as well as he was, you know, at moments, especially in that second set? And that was always going to be a bit unlikely that he would be able to sustain that. Even though he has obviously got a win over Rafa in Rome, that's obviously a very different at a three set event.
you know, the way Schwartzman played, particularly in the second set, and, you know, the first half of that third set was very, very impressive. And, you know, it did make Nadal have to think a bit differently. You know, there were passages of play where Schwartzman was the player when, you know, it was an extended points where, you know, it was like 9+ strokes, I think, where Schwartzman was coming out on top, and Nadal was having to bring out the drop shot, which I feel really see that much from him, to really kind of change the flow and change the momentum. It worked, you know, it worked for him in the end, but I think he was, yeah, it was a little bit, I imagine it was a little bit nerve-wracking in that third set, because there were genuine moments where you wondered whether Schwartzman was going to go two sets to one up. I was surprised though, because, you know, going into this tournament, I was just looking at Schwartzman's clay season, and he's had a couple of quarterfinals, but he's also had a couple of, you know, first round exits as well. And he is a player who I think really does sort of bring it. He's able to bring it together at Roland Garros. It sort of reminded me actually of the situation kind of Dominic Thiem was in, I thought, you know, pre Roland Garros, in the sense that, you know, he hadn't had a good lead up. And maybe kind of Roland Garros was going to inspire him to take him further into the competition. And it obviously, unfortunately, didn't work out for Dominic Thiem. But I certainly think it did for Diego Schwartzman, getting to the quarterfinals, pretty much doing, you know, the best he can do. And, you know, he did take a set off Nadal, and he stopped Nadal's 36 set winning streak. He also, I think, stopped his 38 set winning streak a few seasons ago as well. So yeah, he definitely does relish the competition and facing, you know, one of the, you know, the greatest of all time opposite him. You don't get the sense that it really is there's no sort of fear factor there, really, is there?
No, I feel like they get on well. And I mean, Schwartzman, I think, yeah, he doesn't fear. I think he relishes it. That's the sense I get as well. And he just seems like a very nice bloke, doesn't he, Schwartzman? So, you know, even as a Rafa fan, when he's up against it, you know, Schwartzman was sort of playing very well. You know, I don't know how to phrase it. But yeah, I would just feel like he's a friendly foe. If that makes sense. But yeah, Rafa's now into his 35th Grand Slam semi-final, I think. And I suppose it would be his 14th Grand Slam semi-final at Roland Garros. Obviously, he hasn't lost one in his previous, but that may well change come Friday when Novak Djokovic, unless Berrettini stages the most unlikely comeback, when Novak Djokovic is down the other end. I mean, let's just talk a bit about the Novak Berrettini match. It's been quite regulation, I have to say. 6-3, 6-2 in those first two sets for Novak. You sort of feel like, is this the best that Berrettini can do? Because, you know, he was being made to look very, very ordinary, and he has clinched the third set on a tiebreak, but I still feel like that's the best it's going to get. But, you know, I may be wrong.
I watched those first two sets, and it did very much, I felt, go to the form book. And Djokovic was very much the extractor, I think, of Berrettini's, I think, quite obvious kind of weaknesses against the big three. Particularly, yes, he's got a massive forehand, and the crowd absolutely love it when he hits a winner from it, but there's still some deficiencies there, particularly on the backhand side. I think it has improved kind of this season, but it's certainly not as strong, I think, as it needs to be if he has kind of serious ambitions, I think, of being a, you know, a mainstay in the, you know, in the top 10, or even pushing kind of the top 5. The only kind of question I had was, you know, whether he could bring out, you know, particularly in those first two sets, I didn't see much of the Berrettini sliced back, single-handed backhand. And I thought that would have been a shot that I, you know, if I was facing Djokovic on a clay court, think could potentially work quite well. You know, I think we saw, you know, with Dan Evans, I always go back to Dan Evans' match, where, you know, he was really kind of focusing on that single-handed slice, giving Djokovic no pace. And I wondered whether Berrettini could have employed that a bit more in those first two sets. He liked to go to the drop shot quite a bit. And, you know, I always think it's never a good sign if you go to the drop shot in like set one. It just sort of says to me that, you know, you're not confident in going toe-to-toe from the baseline with your opponent. So, you know, I think there's certainly things he can work on. We'll have to wait and see, you know, with the outcome of the match. But I think Djokovic was looking very much in dominating and imperious form in terms of his serve and his return. I mean, in that second set, Berrettini won only 22% of points on his second serve. So he must have picked it up in the third. But those first two sets, it does suggest a little bit like Nadal in that fourth set against Schwartzman, that he's definitely coming to the boil at the right time.
Yeah, Djokovic proving why he's the best returner in the game. And I mean, where's Dan Evans when you need him, hey? I feel like he's like the new Bible. How to beat Novak on a clay court. I mean, I feel like Novak got off to a bit of a slow start in his clay season, but he's very much there now, playing, you know, the best tennis that he can. So yeah, he's looking very sharp. We're going to take a quick break now, but do join us in a moment where we'll be looking back on all the results from day 10. So don't go anywhere. This is The Passing Shot with Joel and Kim, supported by DownloadTennis.com. And now we're going to move on to look at all the action from day 10 of Roland Garros, where we saw, well, two women's quarterfinals that very much went the distance. I thought it was quite remarkable that we had two in a row that kind of both went, you know, sort of six all at least in that final set. And
I think they both went longer than the two men's quarterfinal matches on that day.
I think they did. Yeah, absolutely. And obviously, Roland Garros, you don't have a tiebreak in the third set or in the fifth set for the men. So it can go on, you know, for as long as you like, really. But let's start with Tamara Zidane.
Zidane Dzeko has needed that, this competition, hasn't she?
She has, because she beat Bianca Andreescu in the first round, 9-7 in the third. And kind of a similar story, really. She had to save break points, I guess, at 7-all in that match. She saved them and then managed to close out the win. So she was sort of in a, you know, very much towards the end of the match, she was in a, you know, in not in the ascendancy, shall we say. And a similar thing happened in the Badosa match. She was break points down, and you thought, oh, if Badosa breaks here, like surely she's got it. But Zidane was able to save them, two forehand winners. And then she came through and broke Badosa. And I mean, she was very composed, I thought. I thought Badosa was getting a lot more worked up on the court, whereas Zidane seemed a bit calmer. And, you know, she's only 23. She's very, very young still. And obviously, she is very much the lowest ranked player left in. She's 85 in the world. And I genuinely don't think anyone would have foreseen this. And she hasn't even, you know, I don't think she's had like the most amazing clay court season. It's not even like we could have predicted it from the form book coming in. It's just kind of come out of nowhere. So she's kind of this year's like Podoroska, I suppose. We don't really want to like compare her, you know, she's her own person, of course, but it's, you know, she is the lowest ranked slam semi-finalist since Podoroska. So yeah.
And I think what has been impressive is those results that have gone, you know, over time, gone the distance in that third set. You know, you talked about the Andreescu round one match here, the Badosa match, 8-6. And she also beat Eugenie Bouchard 8-6 in round one at Wimbledon in 2019. And she credits, you know, she credits her sports psychologist really to kind of help her improve her game. And you know, we've seen that with, you know, Świątek has brought one on board, and it's played, you know, paid dividends for her. And I do think with Zidanšek as well, it is also paying dividends. And I think that the more and more players who kind of talk about how essential it is, and we're seeing it in the results, you know, the fact that she's able to stay composed and really tough it out, and, you know, secure, you know, the victory at the, you know, the very end of a long three setter. I think that's going to make people realize it's more and more of a compulsory thing that you need, you know, in your team. And again, in this match, I think Badosa just got, you know, maybe she saw her head up in lights and, you know, got kind of potentially overwhelmed by that situation. But the pressure, I think, got to her a little bit. And, you know, obviously we were talking about Badosa probably as the favourite for that match and wasn't able to get it done. She will be disappointed. You know, she has had a great clay season regardless. But the fact that Zidanšek has come through, she's just been very, very impressive. And although I think her route to the semi-finals has had probably a bit more sort of twists and turns than some of the, you know, the other players, you know, she's here and she's going to be ready for a fight.
Yeah, you just hope that physically she's okay, you know, after having quite a lot of long matches. But she seems to not be phased when she, you know, goes a breakdown, for example, in a set. Because I know in that first set against Badosa, she was, you know, like, I think a double breakdown, you know, managed to reel Badosa back in. And she does, the sports psychologist must be the critical factor, I think. And I mean, I wonder, will she go all the way? Will it be, you know, two Roland Garros winners, you know, in a row that kind of are very open about the fact that they travel with a sports psychologist?
She was meant to be playing bowl this week, which is a WTA 125 event. She had to pull out because obviously she got to, well, she's still in the French Open, but she really enjoys playing that tournament. She was a two-time champion in 2018, 2019. She was meant to come back. It was cancelled in 2020. It's affectionately known, Kim, as Boland Garros, I am informed.
Brilliant. I love that. Who came up with that? That's so clever. Yeah,
maybe the promoters for it, probably. But yeah, really, really impressive. It just shows you that transition that she's been able to make. And again, a bit like Karatsev, it doesn't matter where you kind of ply your trade for your, you know, the start of your you know, career on the tour, whether that's in the lower down tournaments, they can pay dividends, you know, further into your career. And I think, you know, particularly you know, on the clay where Zidanšek is at home, she's making that count in Paris.
No, for sure. And she will be playing Anastasia Pavlyuchenkova tomorrow, who came through in very similar fashion against Elena Rybakina. 9-7 in the third set. So they went slightly further than the other two. And yeah, I mean, Rybakina took the first set on a tiebreak, and then Pavlyuchenkova sort of pretty dominant in the second set, 6-2. And then, yeah, it was a very solid last set, you know, and 7-7. I was thinking, who is going to break first? But I feel like in the end, you know, they know each other very well. They're playing doubles together. I think they lost today, unfortunately.
What a
though.
Strange experience that must be.
Yeah.
You know, so much on the line, but, you know, keep your doubles partner close, but your singles opponent even closer.
yeah, it must have been very weird, like mentally, to deal with that. But, you know, Pavs came through. I think Rybakina, I guess the inexperience probably showed, I think, a little bit when push came to shove. I think she was a bit too erratic. But Pavlyuchenkova, you know, it's really nice that she's finally got this Grand Slam quarterfinal duck off her back, because she's been in six before, never won one. And actually has never won a doubles Grand Slam quarterfinal either, I don't think. So yeah, she really must have been relieved. But I think she's kind of said that, like, she's obviously wanted to get to this stage for such a long time that now she's finally done it, she said it was quite a neutral reaction. So it sounds like she's obviously not getting too ahead of herself. She's just focused on, you know, the rest of the work that needs to be done, because obviously she will be the hot favorite for tomorrow. And I guess, you know, how is she going to handle that pressure? Because it's, you know, she's been around a while. Yes, she's got lots of experience, but like, she hasn't been in this situation before. None of them have. So you just don't know how they're going to handle it, to be quite honest with you.
Yeah, she's the first Russian woman to reach a Grand Slam semi-final since Elena Vezhnina reached the last four at Wimbledon in 2016. And that is quite a long time, I think. You know, if we think about kind of, you know, the pedigree of Russian women's tennis over the years, you know, particularly in that, I think, golden era where we had, you know, Sharapova, Mishkina, Petrova, Zvonareva, all those players. You know, to go 5 years for Russia to get to their next semi-finalist, and to think it's Pavlyuchenkova, is probably quite surprising. But it's very, again, it's very, very impressive. And I think, you know, a lot of people will, I think, look at this and think that this is like her getting the, you know, the monkey off her back. And, you know, she's one of those players who I think before this tournament, you know, we talk about players who, you know, who've been world number one and never won a Grand Slam. And, you know, I think Pavlyuchenkova is one of those players who is probably, you know, up to this point was one of the best players not to reach a Grand Slam semi-final, you know, probably across the men and women's tours. And, you know, I'm really glad that she's kind of got the monkey off her back now. And we'll just have to wait and see if experience will, you know, help her in a really inexperienced field. You would think so. But again, she's not been in this situation before. So it will be fascinating to kind of see how that plays out.
I do wonder if there will be like a physical issue just because she has strapping on her leg. And that's the only thing, you know, because she's played the doubles as well. I'm just potentially a bit concerned about the fitness side. But I mean, it's exciting because genuinely tomorrow, although Sakkari and Pavlyuchenkova are the favourites, I don't think they're strong favourites.
Yeah, they're not the standout favourites, are they?
And I actually do think if it's a Krejcikova-Zidanec final, that would be... I mean, I just find that amazing because, like, how random, but it's also quite wonderful, I think, if that was to be the case. So we will see. But yeah, I think that's crazy that the Russians haven't reached this stage for 5 years. I was surprised when I saw that because you just sort of think of them as quite a dominant nation still. But actually, yeah, there has been a bit of a void. So, you know, Pavlyuchenkova has finally broken a little bit and we'll see if she can go any further. But well, two players actually that both have Russian heritage on the men's side and were playing their quarterfinal yesterday, and that's Sasha Zverev and Alejandro Davidovich Fokina. This was pretty routine, wasn't it? The first set was a bit strange. They were breaking each other left, right and center. Zverev managed to come through the first set 6-4 and then kind of rattle through the next two sets 6-1, 6-1. He was done in just over an hour and a half. So he's sort of very nicely gone through into his first Roland Garros semi-final.
Yes. I don't think Davidovich Fokina really turned up. I think, you know, he had a lot of miles in his legs already getting to the quarterfinals. And I think he was already out of steam, you know, in particularly kind of going in, you know, I think going into the match and then certainly in sets 2 and 3, and it was quite easy for Zverev. I think, you know, a lot of people kind of looking at Zverev's game and the fact that, yes, he's reached the semi-finals at Roland Garros, I think, for the first time, but has he played his best tennis to get there? Has he needed to play his best tennis to get there? No, he hasn't. He's had a very, you know, he's had a very, very kind draw, but he's made the most of it. You know, He's playing and winning. I think he's winning ugly, to use that sort of classic expression. But I mean, you just got to look at his sort of match times on court, and it's gone from 2 hours and 49 minutes, 2 hours 26 minutes, 2 hours and 8 minutes, 1 hour 54 minutes, and then 1 hour 36 minutes for his quarterfinals. So he can't blame any sort of physical ailments, I think, on how he does from here on in. It's just, I think, now making sure that he can turn up his game a notch, because I don't think we've truly seen that, apart from, I think, glimpses in that Nishikori match of his best tennis.
Yeah, I mean, he almost won the US Open winning ugly. So perhaps this is actually what he needs to do, and it just works for him. I mean, obviously Tsitsipas will be next, who's going to be, you know, obviously his toughest opponent.
Up.
Yeah, massive step up. Tsitsipas is playing so well. I mean, I fully expect Tsitsipas to win that one. I don't think Zverev's had the level required, but, you know, stranger things have happened. Yeah, I mean, Davidovich Fokina in this match, he was gone. You know, his body obviously wasn't. I think afterwards in the press conference, he said he woke up that morning and he was just so like done.
He had spent 13 hours and 10 minutes on courts in his first kind of four matches. So, you know, to come up against someone like Zverev, you know, top 10 player, was going to be very much a tall order. I mean, just going back to kind of Zverev, you know, reaching the semifinals, he's now done that or better at three of the four majors, obviously got to the final at the US Open. But a lot of people kind of talking about the runs, you know, the caliber of opponents he's had to face. And I, you know, we all understand that, you know, draw is a draw, and you can only beat what's in front of you. But just to kind of put it into kind of context of who he has kind of had to face up for so far. I mean, at Roland Garros this year, he's had to defeat zero of top 45 ranked opponents. On his march through to the final of the US Open in 2020, he had to defeat zero of top 26 ranked opponents. And then in the Australian Open in 2020, when he reached the semi-finals, he beat Rublev in round four, and then, you know, he beat Wawrinka in that quarterfinal. But again, he defeated zero of top 14 opponents. So it feels like he's been getting some really good draws over the last few seasons. And, you know, it's still his record against the top is still not very good. He's 0-9 against top 10 in majors. And there's, you know, that is obviously something he's going to have to put right if he has serious ambitions of winning a slam. And, you know, coming up against Tsitsipas in the semi-final, although he's been in this situation before, he's going to have to break new ground if he wants to get to the final.
Yeah, I mean, that's why Tsitsipas, I think, is the hot favourite for that match. I think Zverev's got a winning record over Tsitsipas. I think he leads it their head-to-head like 5-2. But Tsitsipas has been like the... like in form clay quarter, you know, along with Rafa this season. So you kind of fully expect Tsitsipas to come through. I mean, he was quite convincing against Medvedev last night. Medvedev, I think, should really have got a set in that match. He had two set points in the second set.
Second set, definitely.
And he was a breakup, I think, in the third set. But he was... like with Medvedev, we know he's quite hot-headed, and I felt that he was losing it a bit at points in that match. And Tsitsipas just kind of, you know, remained calm throughout. And obviously we saw Medvedev have a bit of a rant with the umpire. I think he sort of blamed the umpire for, you know, the fact that he said, if I lose the match, it's your fault, because there was a scoreboard that was flashing and he was moaning at the umpire about it. But obviously the umpire wasn't going to do anything about that.
Kim, we need to talk about match point, because Medvedev hit an underarm serve on match point. Tsitsipas put it away and won the match. But for me, that really was like, I think Tsitsipas put Medvedev in his outside of his comfort zone. I think Medvedev sort of realized that he wasn't going to win this match just kind of plying from the baseline. You know, we saw him kind of come to the net, and, you know, to his credit, you know, we saw variety that, you know, we know that is in, you know, Medvedev's, you know, kind of toolbox on a tennis court. But really for me, when he brought out the underarm serve on match point, it felt like he had kind of thrown the towel in.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, Tsitsipas called it a very millennial shot.
Yeah.
I think afterwards, which was, I suppose it is in a way, isn't it? To do it on match point down, that's quite bold.
I just feel like it's inevitable we're going to get to a point where some bright spark is going to try an underarm serve in a Grand Slam final on match point. If Nick Kyrgios gets there, that is 100% happening, but... I can see that being something that is new ground, I think, in the future. But I think it wasn't although the kind of head to head was vastly in Medvedev's favour, I think we all sort of felt that Tsitsipas was a favourite going into this. And, you know, as you kind of rightly said, his sort of cool and calm nature that I think he has applied to his game this season meant that he doesn't feel like he's getting kind of flustered. Whereas, you know, before maybe a season ago, he was getting frustrated perhaps a little bit easier. But here it felt very fine. And even though he was kind of set points down, he didn't panic.
Yeah. And I think, you know, I mean, Medvedev schooled Tsitsipas in the Australian Open semi-final, so it's sort of, I guess, revenge for Tsitsipas for that. And, you know, this is now his third straight semi-final at Slam. He's probably going to reach his first final, so it's paying off all this work that he's been doing.
Just quickly before we go on to other things, Medvedev interestingly spoke about the night session, and he was not happy that match was being played. It was the last match being played in front of zero people. And he said, he was quoted in his kind of press conference saying, basically, Roland Garros prefer Amazon over people. And that was referencing the fact that Amazon Prime have, I think, French Open coverage in France exclusively. And I think they would have been pushing for the best match of the day to be in that night slot. And that's why we got the Medvedev-Tsitsipas match here. But he obviously wasn't happy about it, because, he wants to play in front of fans, and there were no fans at that United session, and he felt like that sort of, you know, I think was a bit of an annoyance for him. I mean, where do you kind of stand on that? Do you think he's got a point, or, you know, obviously I think with Amazon, it's kind of like they want to bring it out to a big audience, so that's why they want match of the day. Where what are your kind of thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, if it had been one night later, they would have had fans, because obviously the curfew's changed and like Novak and Berrettini have fans tonight, although they've just had to suspend play because the fans have all had to like go out the stadium, which this is where I kind of at the moment, this is where I kind of disagree with the night sessions at all, because I think if there's going to be a curfew and you're going to have fans rifling out the stadium at 11 p.m. and you've had to physically stop the match to let all those fans out, you know, it changes the whole momentum and it can completely change possibly the result of a match. Obviously, if it rains and stuff like that, you have to, because it's the weather, you can't control that. But I just feel like if they know there's still a curfew in place, I know they want to sell their separate tickets and they've got the TV to think about, but it's not exactly like a full arena. So it's only 5,000 fans. So if it was a normal year and, you know, you've got full capacity, like next year might be, then I understand the night sessions having been a thing. But I think for the whole of last week, you know, none of the night sessions had any fans. Like, should you even bother with them? Should you not just schedule like how you used to, four matches? You start at 10 a.m. You just keep going and carry on. And I don't know. I definitely agree with Medvedev to a point that, you know, they're just thinking more of TV schedules than fans. And I guess of the Novak Rafa semi on Friday, I just feel like, I guess that the old fashioned way would have been, you know, the first men's semi probably would have started at like 2 p.m. or something, and they would have just played two in a row. But what's going to happen now? Are they going to, you know, they'll start the second one at like 7 p.m. or 8 p.m. I don't know.
You would think so. I'm pretty sure Amazon, if...
Yeah,
you know,
but that's where
Guy Forget has basically said, you know, Amazon want the best match, and maybe that's why it's sort of, you know, leaned towards, maybe I obviously don't know, but, you know, we've seen that the scheduling has meant that it's been a men's match more often than not. But you would expect, if it's going on that sort of rationale of the best match of the day, you're going to probably expect Nadal Djokovic in that night session.
Yeah, for me, I mean, I know they do this, obviously, the US Open, the Australian Open, and that's like normal, we expect that, I guess. But I don't know, for me, clay court tennis, it's outdoors for me, and it's daytime.
It feels a bit weird, doesn't it? It's not Friday night lights like in New York City. It doesn't feel like that at the moment. Particularly, you know, it's only one match as well. You know, it's not like at the US Open where there's two matches in that night session. So, yeah, I think there's sort of obviously still work to be done there.
I also think, like, obviously the Australian Open, they have a semi-final for the men in the evening. But I think the final is an evening as well, isn't it? But so they give them a bit more time, whereas the final of the French is still going to be in the afternoon on a Sunday. So if you're scheduling the second men's semi-final really late on the Friday, that's perhaps quite a considerably less amount of time for that winner to recover for the Sunday. I don't know. I'm just a bit like, I sound like I'm really anti the night sessions, but I do think there's like an integrity issue when you are putting like Amazon Prime above like the players perhaps and their welfare or their hopes for the tournament, or I don't know. I'm just sort of, yeah, I guess I'm a bit of a slow burner when it comes to accepting clay court night sessions at Roland Garros. I mean, it's something that Wimbledon probably won't ever do because they have the you know, the residential curfew in place, you know, at the best of times. So I don't think we'd see that at Wimbledon, but well, never say never. I guess they are trying to innovate. But anyway, with Medvedev going out, Joel, we do actually have a result in our collector set almost. So we've ended up with a four-way tie between Lee, Jen, Stephen and Carol. So well done to the four of them for, you know, kind of coming joint first. But we will be having a tiebreak question to decide the final, you know, winner, because as much as we'd love to send out four mugs, we can't.
Parting shot budget, it just cannot stretch that far, Kim.
But Stephen and Carol in the same family. So perhaps if one of them wins, they could share a mug. I don't know. but we'll be sending out a tiebreak question to those individuals in the next kind of day or so. So if you're listening, look out for that. Get your thinking caps on. But let's just have a quick look at what else is going on, Joel. Joe Salisbury is really excitingly in the mixed doubles final tomorrow, which is first on Philippe Chatrier. So I think it begins at 11 a.m. UK time. And that's Vesnina and Karatsev are the opponents. So it's a pretty decent pair, isn't it? Vesnina and Karatsev. Yeah. Nice for Vesnina as well, because she's just kind of come back. So
if that's a pairing at the Olympics, that would be quite a tricky opposition, I think, to face. But yeah, I'm really rooting for Joe Salisbury in that one. I think we haven't won in mixed doubles at Roland Garros for a long time. So it'll be a nice piece of history, I think, for him if he's able to secure the win.
Yeah, definitely. Although if Vesnina and Karatsev do win, then I'd be pleased for Karatsev because this will be his first Grand Slam of any discipline.
And Vesnina as well, coming back onto the tour, you know, got to the third round in the singles, all the way through to the final in the mixed doubles. Again, very good story for both of them.
Yeah, for sure. And then that's followed by Pavlyuchenkova and Zidanejic, and then Krejcikova, Sakkari. So yeah, the women's semis will be on sort of after 2 UK time. I mean, quickly, Joel, predictions, who are you going for the women?
Yeah, so I am going to have to go in Pavlyuchenkova, Zidanejic. I'm going with Pavs. I'm bought into the Cinderella story. I think, you know, she's waited a long time to get to this point. I don't think she's going to falter. I think she'll be very composed and she will be able to kind of bring out her best tennis, you know, the tennis that got her through, you know, Sabalenka, Azarenka as well. I think with all of the time that's, you know, she's poured in, I think, to her career, I really think this could be a kind of crowning moment for that. And I don't expect her to kind of fall to Zidanejic. I think she'll just have too much in her game. So if she can stay, you know, there might be injury concerns, but if she can stay kind of physically fit, I've got Pavlyuchenkova coming through in 2 sets. I think it's going to be a straight sets job.
Interesting. Okay. I've also got Pavlyuchenkova, also straight sets. I think I feel like Sakkari will come through the other one, but I think that might be 3 sets. But Krejcikova has been playing very, very well. She beat Svitolina in straight sets, didn't she? And she's had some very solid wins, and she's on a 10 match win streak. So I mean, I actually wouldn't be surprised if it's Krejcikova in 3 sets, or Krejcikova in the, I mean, I don't know, I feel like Sakkari was my favorite, but I'm so undecided.
Yeah, I think for me, Sakkari Krejcikova is more of a, it's more of a 50-50. They're both playing well. I think Krejcikova has more momentum behind her, but the confidence that win Sakkari would have had over Świątek, it'll be interesting to see if she can bring that confidence into that match tomorrow. I mean, it's quite a quick turnaround for them, because, you know, they're playing on consecutive days. But if you're going to have to ask me, I would probably say I'm going to say, although I quite like Krejcikova's odds, I'm going to go Sakkari in 3. I just think that, again, I think, you know, the way I was looking at her and her kind of presence on court against Świątek, I just felt like she had the bit between her teeth and she's not really ready to let it go. And although Krejcikova is can be a very aggressive player, so can Sakkari. And I think that she is able to kind of handle that. So I'm going to go with Sakkari in 3. And Kim, just looking at the men's semi-finals, we've got one of them set in stone, Tsitsipas versus Zverev. Tsitsipas leads the head-to-head 5-2. He's probably played the better tennis this tournament. Zverev hasn't really come to the fore, I don't think we've seen the best tennis from Zverev. For me, I would be surprised if Zverev comes through this. I've got to back the person who I think has been playing the better, more consistently high level tennis, and that's Tsitsipas. So I'm going to go Tsitsipas in 4.
Yeah, I'm going to go Tsitsipas in straight sets. He's got a leading head-to-head. I think I said it was the other way around earlier, but it's actually 5-2 to Tsitsipas. My bad. Apologies. And, you know, they've only played once on clay, actually, which Tsitsipas won. And as well as Zverev's been doing, you know, Tsitsipas, I think, has had a higher caliber of opponent. He's played better throughout, you know, the whole clay court season and at Roland Garros. And I just think he'll have the edge. I mean, it could go four, but I wouldn't be surprised if it's actually quite a routine, I feel like it could be quite an underwhelming semi-final, which I think would be fine if people are expecting Novak Rafa to be very, you know, to be a potential absolute thriller, which, I mean, I guess, should we try and, you know, quickly preview the Novak Rafa semi, because this would be their 58th meeting. I mean, you've got Djokovic to win this, haven't you? Because you predicted him at the start of the tournament.
Yep.
To win. Do you think it's going to be a five setter? Or do you think it's going to be more one-sided?
If it does happen, and it's looking that way, I think both players are reaching, have shown some of their best tennis in their kind of quarterfinal matches. So I think it's going to be a very tight affair. And I know kind of what happened last time they played, you know, at Roland Garros. And I know what happened, obviously, in Rome as well, with Nadal winning earlier on in the clay season. But I've just got a sneaking suspicion Djokovic might just come through. So I've got Djokovic in five. Interestingly, through to the quarterfinals, Novak's break points converted is at 67%, whereas Nadal's breakpoint conversion is below 50%. So I don't know if Djokovic is playing the big points better, and that might come into play if they do face each other in the semi-finals. But yeah, I've sadly got Djokovic for all those Nadal fans, winning in five.
I mean, the Lorenzo Musetti match may have skewed stats slightly because, I mean, I'm not taking anything away from Novak, but the last three sets of that match were extremely one-sided, which may well have skewed the stats a bit. But I'll go with Rafa because I at the start of the tournament I picked him, so obviously I want Rafa to win it. I think I might go and put my head in a bucket on Friday. I don't think I can bear to watch, to be quite honest with you. So I'm sort of already got ants in my pants, it's fair to say. So perhaps we better leave it on that note. And we will be back though after whatever happens after that match. I just wonder if, you know, if it is going to be, well, it will be a night session, you know, if they're going to be affected by the crowd maybe going out halfway through. And I mean, God knows what's going to happen, but we'll be here at some point to round it up.
It will be a thrilling encounter if it does happen, which it looks like it will be. So we will be looking forward to that one. But yeah, this wraps it up for our quarterfinal round by round catch up with The Passing Shot. I hope you've enjoyed listening to us. Remember, if you want to stay up to date on all things French Open, make sure to subscribe to us on your podcasting platform of choice, whether that's Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Overcast, Castbox, Stitcher, wherever you listen to your podcast, make sure to hit that subscribe button. And you can also listen to us on the downloadtennis.com app. If you have been enjoying listening to the show and want to help out the show, you can also leave us a rating and comment on Apple Podcasts. We would really appreciate it if you do. We always kind of love reading the feedback and the support that the kind of listeners give us. So if you want to help out the show and you're thinking, how do I do that? That is one of the ways that you can help us out.
And you can follow us as well on social media. We're on Twitter, Instagram and Facebook at Passing Shot Pod. So do join us and give us a like and a follow if you don't already. And you can let us know all your thoughts and feedback as well on all those social channels. And if you'd prefer to email us, we can be reached passingshotpod@gmail.com.
And we will be back probably on Friday evening, UK time. We'll see how far into the night that potential semi-final goes, assuming that Nadal Djokovic is on that night session. So we'll have to wait and see. But yeah, we are planning on recording our semi-final round by round catch up on Friday evening, UK time. So I hope you can join us for that. And we will see you again soon.
This is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.